Happy Hour, friends. We are back into your earballs. I'm here with the great John McGuire.
It's me. I'm pretty awesome.
I am vaccinated.
Yeah, buddy.
Two shots in my arm. My arm this time did not hurt as bad going in. I even told the lady, she was like very gentle. I did not feel it. Wasn't like last time I felt like a fucking shotgun going off my arm and continued to hurt. Now it's a little sore. She told me to just keep moving my arm and like, you know, just constantly move it while I'm doing stuff to like help it out. So that's what's going on right now. Now, you know, popping an Advil, drinking a lot of fluids. Hopefully I'm not getting that like weird sickness everybody sometimes gets for like 24 hours.
Yeah, I mean, if it's going to hit you because you got it so late in the day, it'll probably happen while you're sleeping. You might sleep through it, which would be ideal. Otherwise, tomorrow you're going to feel like the drizzling shits.
Yeah, except I have a fucking, you know, because I'm sleeping in Gabe's bed now. I have like a latex bed, which I'm not looking forward to sweating in. But that's neither here nor there. We also have the great Emmy award-winning Matt Giaquinto on the show. Thanks for joining us today, buddy.
Heidi ho there, boys and girls.
We brought him on because we have a good horror movie to kick off the show today. So how about, John, you tell us what else we're going to be talking about?
So we're going to be talking about The Empty Man, and that's why we brought Matt on the air tonight. It's one of the most challenging and I would dare say exceptional horror films that I've seen in a very, very long time. I'm going to throw down the gauntlet right now, George, and say for me, it's up there with a Heredity, but in a very different way. Thunder Force just dropped on the Netflix, Melissa McCarthy's new movie. I've got some thoughts about it. Mikey Erg just put out a self-titled album. We gave it a good listen. We're going to talk about some rock and roll music tonight. And finally, on, of all places, Nickelodeon, a puppet fantasy called The Barbarian and the Troll, which I'm going to tell you up front has too much singing for George to watch. And that's what we're going to talk about tonight.
You know how I am with musicals. I do not like them.
I got through the first episode. I won't spoil it until we talk about it later, but I got through the first episode and I'm like, oh, this is not going to work.
Yeah. Before I forget, you know, we're leaning in, you know, seeing the tail end of this COVID thing, hopefully light at the end of the tunnel. I could use a cocktail. Give it to me.
So the cocktail tonight, ironically for a children's teenish show about a puppet barbarian, I wanted to find a cool barbarian cocktail. So this is actually called, from Edible Indie, Cognac the Barbarian. It is one I just can't get over the name. It's probably a terrible drink, but it doesn't matter because it's got such a good name. It is an ounce and a half of cognac, an ounce and a half of pineapple ginger shrub, three quarters of an ounce of sherry, half an ounce of lemon juice, half an ounce of Tempest Fugit, Canea Leero de Ur, and a half ounce of brown sugar maple simple syrup. So you're going to shake and strain over ice, and you're going to top with a red wine float and garnish with a pineapple cube. It doesn't sound very appetizing, but it's called Cognac the Barbarian, and I love it for that.
What's that one weird ingredient that you struggled very hard to say?
I thought I did a very good job with that. Yeah, Tempest Fugit.
Ah, what is that? Like, what
Kina Leero de Ur. To be very honest with you, I never looked it up because the drink it sounded horrible to me, but the title was so good. I just want to say Cognac the Barbarian because I think it's clever, even though it's a terrible drink.
This is so the episode. This is going to be one of those episodes. I feel it because you are just giddy and you lost your mind before we've even started. So,
well, I'm ready to have fun, man, because I am so happy that my best bud is fully vaccinated and soon I'm going to be back there on the couch with you and we're going to do it live. And that to me is the little pot of gold at the end of this shit show rainbow. So I came into tonight just like laughing and excited to be here. So here I am, Cognac the Barbarian.
What's so funny is at the beginning of this, it took a lot to figure out how to do one person remote, let alone double remotes. But, you know, 90% of the time, what people don't see is that we, you know, we start the show half the time. Something is going wrong. We're trying to do double remotes into this thing. So just to know that I'm going to have just to deal with maybe one guest and, you know, people like Matt could come over now because Matt's fully vaccinated too. And, you know, it's going to be nice to not have to deal with technology at that level and just focus on having a good time with you guys. And, you know, we appreciate that. And we want to, you know, we appreciate all the comments. Look, it's a crazy year. I'm excited to be fully vaccinated. And look, we're not stupid either. Like, I am fully aware that my child is not going to be vaccinated anytime soon and that we have to still be careful, you know, knowing that we need to be careful who he's around because he could spread it to other people who aren't vaccinated. He could spread it to other children. It's still a little bit of a weird time. So at least for us, I don't feel weird going to the office or things like that or seeing you guys.
There you go.
That's a positive in my book.
I think
book.
It's positive.
I learned how to string a bass this week. That was something I'd never done before. I was always like curious about where the bass string goes because you don't see the edge of it. And I'm like, wow. And it goes in the hole in the tuning pegs. It was so amazing when I finally learned that.
Stringing a bass is so much more delightful and easier than stringing like an electric guitar because one, the strings are so much bigger. Two, when you're doing it on a Fender and the little tip of the string goes in the hole and you just bend it down and twist, it is like I can change bass strings all day in the sun. But if a buddy's like, hey, can you help me out and change my guitar strings? I'm like, fuck.
Yeah.
How much of a favor do I actually owe you? I hate changing 100%. Guitar strings, especially on Gibson style guitars. Fender, not so bad.
Yeah. And I was like looking at like the headstock and I'm like, oh, it's going to be troublesome because you don't see where the hole, like you don't understand how these like work. One YouTube video. And now I'm like buying bass strings for all my basses. I'm like, oh, I'm restringing all this shit. They've never like, I can't tell you the last time I restrung a bass. But in this time, it was, you know, I had to lower the string size on the Iron Maiden one because it's a little bit on the wonky side. By the way, right now, very, very little fret noise anymore. So I think moving to the lower string size was the smart move. So any bass players out there, if you have a warped neck, try going down a string size. It might be good.
Yeah, and also it's going to be a little nicer on your fingers too.
Yeah.
And you're not going out and gigging. So for the bass playing that you're doing, it's going to be a much more overall better experience. And you don't have to really worry about so much about durability because you can just order more strings if you need it. So that's great.
So here was the scary part getting the COVID vaccine. And I think we talked about last week where I got the injections into the webbing of my toes. I think we spent a little too much time on that last week. Well, I get to the Rite Aid today and they're like, one of the things on the form was like, you have not received a steroid injection in the last week, you know, since last time. And I'm like, fuck, does it count if it's in the webbing of my toes? I'm like, if this means I'm losing my fucking vaccine, I'm not going to say yes. And then like, I get to the counter, like, you have had no other vaccinations. I'm like, I've had zero other vaccinations, but I did not mention the steroid into this webbing of my toes. I mean, I don't know how the fuck that could affect it. But, like, there's no way I was going to give up my COVID vaccine because of, like, a steroid that didn't even take because my toes still fucking hurt.
Listen, if you grow a third arm or a vestigial tail, that would be amazing.
Or,
that's, like, the side effect.
My,
cool.
My biggest concern is 1 foot is going to become really muscular.
Superpower.
Superpower. Almost like your left one.
Yeah.
Because that would be very unlikely.
No, it's my right one. It's like so fucking big. It's going to be like massive. It's just like, look, I can like flex. And like, I can just say, I can't wear shoes anymore in just that foot because it's too busy flexing its muscles. That's what I'm thinking might happen.
So if it got so big, would you call the right one Goldberg and the left one Gilberg?
No. I think I would call it, that was kind of funny. I'm almost ready to give it to you, but I'm like, I feel like this one is.
I can't believe you're not selling me on that.
I know it's a tough one.
That was like such an obvious, like that even most of our listeners who don't enjoy wrestling would get. Wow.
It's like, it's almost like the left one is Chris Evans in like the beginning of Captain America 1. And the other one is like Chris Evans when he was like flexing the helicopter with his bicep shirtless in like Winter Soldier.
Yeah, mine was better.
Yours was better. I'm going to give it to you. One thing that was fantastic, though. So Empty Man. Empty Man is one of the last Fox movies, if not the last Fox movie. And it was shelved for a long time. Had a New Mutants situation. But because it wasn't New Mutants, nobody knew about it. It's a horror movie. Horror movies in general don't do great in cinemas unless it's like crazy blockbuster. So this was one we had not heard of. Maybe the subreddit community of horror was maybe expecting this. Me, I knew nothing about it. It was the last Fox movie to drop that Disney, once Disney acquired it. They just released it quietly around Halloween in theaters. Like four people saw this movie. And it recently came out on VOD. You can rent it on one of the many platforms out there. It is available to rent. It's not available to just see on Netflix. So you got to get on like Apple Music or something for $4.99. But that said, It also has an absolutely terrible Rotten Tomatoes review reading, both for fans and for like real critics. So I was a little concerned. I'm like, do I watch this? But on subreddit horror, which I frequent regularly, this movie is being called like the next great cult classic. And it hasn't been out for a few weeks yet. So I'm like, you know what? It sounds cool. Like they're saying, don't watch the trailer. The trailer is fucking god awful. And I got to be honest with you guys. I watched the trailer and I'm like, I don't want to watch this. And I held off for a few weeks because the trailer was that bad. And then I popped up and I watched it and I'm like, this is different. I have things we're going to talk about a little later, but like I thought it was the most refreshing new take on horror that incorporates a lot of different things we know, like everything from like the teen slasher to the Candyman to the procedural detective show to a cult, real cult. It has so much going for it and they tie it together very well. And I just love that this felt like an action adventure horror movie than just your typical artsy fartsy A24 movie. John, what are your thoughts?
So I'm so glad that you mentioned the trailer. And before I go into the IMDb description for our listeners, I will say that you're spot on when you're talking about the trailer, because if the trailer was any indication, that would have been what Fox would have cut the movie into had they given any more fucks by the time the movie was coming around. Because the trailer is a completely different movie than the movie you actually get to see. Now, according to IMDb, on the trail of a missing girl, an ex-cop comes across a secretive group attempting to summon a terrifying supernatural entity. And the trailer, for all intents and purposes, would make you think it was like a teen horror movie. And for a hot second, you would have thought it was in the latter part, in the actual first act, the real first act of this movie. But it really does take you on a journey from beginning to end. And it does it in a very, I want to say, unorthodox way for most Hollywood movies, especially something made by like a Fox Searchlight, which is a major film studio, where you think you're getting one movie. It takes you on a completely different journey. And then it ties everything up from that initial movie you thought you were going to get in the first 20 minutes with a little bow on the end. It was a movie that I thought was challenging in a lot of ways, because at every point where you thought it was going to zig, it zagged. And it was challenging because there are things that I think as a person who watches a lot of movies, you're kind of programmed to, you know, think of what the beats are going to be. And especially once you think you know what the movie is, you start kind of fantasy booking it a certain way and then it turns. And I thought that was really exciting. I thought that was a very exciting way to present a movie like this, which is a cult story. It's a detective story. It's an occult story. It's a kind of a weird, like urban legend type story, but it all works. Like, you know, when we talk about something like Underwater, you know, we talked about Underwater in a previous episode, the Kristen Stewart movie, where it is definitely clearly two different movies, the movie that the studio wanted and the movie that the director wanted. And they kind of mismatched it and put it back together into like a Frankenstein that doesn't really look like either movie. This movie is a cohesive story from start to finish, and it should not work, but it does.
So before we let Matt talk, and I do want to get Matt's thoughts on this, I want to lay the groundwork a little bit. And this is very much, if you've seen The Slender Man or any sort of Candyman, there's a million movies out there like this where it's like, if you say someone's name a couple times and you close the lights out or something, they will appear and kill you. This is very much at the very grassroots, at the granular level. That's what this is. This is very much an urban legend type show. But this is a movie that also gives you the backstory and where it takes, you know, where it goes like 20 years in the future. So you do not just see like what, you know, one moment in time of this urban legend. You see the whole universe of this urban legend as it, you know, from the moment they possibly find it to, you know, where it ends up. Now, this is a little bit weird science fiction too. So I did get some True Detective vibes in it, but it pays off well. The only thing I need to tell people is that the first 20 minutes of this movie, there's a 20-minute prologue. There's a
24-minute.
It's crazy. There's a 24-minute prologue. This is a two-hour, almost 20-minute horror movie, which is, under any other circumstance, could have been a terrible, just on the fact that it's way too long for a horror movie, but they do it right. And I want your thoughts, Matt, without spoiling too much, but I think we got to get in there a little bit. What, you are a huge horror connoisseur. You are a horror editor. You have seen it all. Where did this land for you?
I love this movie. This was a first. I know it was released in fall of 2020, but this is the real first gem of 2021. I mean, just a spectacular joy of find for horror aficionados. It reminds me a lot of in 1999 when the studios dumped a movie called Ravenous. They just, I mean, they cut a shitty trailer. They scored it to Rob Zombie. And those of us who discovered Ravenous found a absolutely wonderful horror movie. This is the exact same thing. Fox produced it. Disney bought Fox. Nobody knew what to do with this movie. And so they literally just dumped it in theaters. I mean, and it is, like you guys said, it is an expansive journey. It's 2.5 hours. And it is worth it. I mean, there's some scenes in here that horror fans will be talking about for years to come.
Now, I feel like a lot. Now, again, I spent some time on the horror subreddit, and there was some complaints about it not being a traditional horror movie. This is not a traditional horror movie. First off, there isn't a single jump scare in it, which I loved. Like, that's when I actually told you about it, John. I'm like, all right, there's no jump scares in it. It is weird. It is a little artsy, but it's not fartsy. And I appreciate that. I appreciate that it does turn into like a detective procedural thriller halfway through. And that helped carry, because like if you had done 2.5 hours of like shock horror, you would have just been worn out or bored. In this case, by kind of flipping the script and making it almost of a whodunit, it really carries the center part of the movie. So you're constantly on your edge of your seat waiting to see what happens. And then when it gets to horror and there's this scene in a forest where you will see the most different stylistic version of horror I've ever seen. I don't know how to explain it without spoiling it, but you will see a very, very different take on you know, videotaping, photographing, documenting horror. I don't know how to even say it, but it blew my mind. Matt, I know you thought it was one of the most impressive things you've seen in a while.
For those of you playing at home, one of the reasons why the director, he's a first timer, but he cut his teeth doing basically the special features for most of David Fincher's Blu-ray releases. So he learned from the master. So his setups are great. The camera angles, the moves. This is a guy who I hope he gets a chance to make a second movie, because you lights off, sound up, focus in. Great soundtrack, too. Absolutely fantastic soundtrack.
Oh, yeah.
Just a wonderful, wonderful time. I rewound it several times just based on some of the shots, just to watch the shots again. It's beautiful.
I'm glad you mentioned Fincher, Matt, because you definitely could tell that he studied under Fincher. Like, the eye for a lot of the shots is very much Fincher, but it never feels like a cover band. And I think that right. is very much to the director's credit, because, you know, let's face it, when you have directors who study under other directors, the director's name is David Pryor, by the way, you know, often you're like, you know, this is someone else directing a movie like this, but it feels like the Bud Light version of, you know, Spielberg or something else, because it's very much done, you know, as if they're playing a cover. However, this is very, very fresh looking. And I think it's even a fresh take on the kind of movies that David Fincher even makes, which I thought was pretty cool.
Yeah, and look, and all the acting, I didn't know any of the actors in this movie. All of them were solid. I never felt like anybody was phoning it in. I was never like at a point where I'm like, oh, you know, it just never felt cheesy. And there's chances where it could have. Like, there's points where it could have gone there, and it didn't. My one complaint, and I'm not spoiling it, so we're not getting too deep on it, but I did feel the ending came together where you do have a lot of questions left, and I'm not sure whether that was on purpose or not. Yes, at one point you can just take it at a you know, you can take it for what it is, and they can take it for what they say it is. But you're also left wondering whether something was just, you know, it just felt like something was missing at the end. And I didn't. It's not that I didn't get the reveal. I just kind of wanted a little bit more. Did you guys feel that way, or maybe it was just because the journey was so great, we kind of wanted a longer, like, you know, a more powerful reveal at the end?
Well, I read from the director that what we're essentially seeing is some form of a rough cut, that they didn't even get a chance to polish, edit, which is essentially, without spoiling anything, the ending gets a little cosmic, shall we say. Yeah. Take that as love, Lovecraft, whatever, just go with it. They just didn't get a chance to straighten it out, and it needed one more pass in the edit room to make it truly spectacular, but it's enough. You won't get confused.
I think it has a great last shot, and as far as wanting more out of the ending, I tend to feel, after watching this movie and really thinking critically about it for like a bunch of days, because I haven't been able to stop thinking about the movie, is that there was only really one way this could go in the end and stick the landing in a horror movie sense. And I think they did that. I think they did that. And I think that although they probably could have given us more, it might in the long run be better that they didn't. And you kind of get the ending that you get, which is a very, to me, satisfying conclusion to the story that actually makes sense, because that's the problem with a lot of horror-esque movies, is that when they hit the go home, they don't know where to go. And then you end up being like, wow, you had this amazing story. And then in the last like few seconds, you fumbled at the 2-yard line. But I don't feel like this one did that. I feel like it really did stick the landing. And I was pretty impressed with it.
Yeah, I'm not saying it blew the landing. I'm just saying it just left me with a few more questions I would have liked answered, especially since we had 2 hours and 20 minutes to get there. Allison said the same thing when she watched. So I watched it once on my own and watched it again with her. And she said the same thing. She's like, this movie, like, I'm not sure if I love the ending, but I can't stop thinking about it. And that's exactly what you said. So
this movie also wasn't going to go anywhere to begin with, because there's no actual notable. The most notable actor in the cast is Stephen Root.
Yep. And that's like, right? A bit part. Yes. Yeah.
And that's a glorified cameo.
And when I saw who was the main actor, his name is James Badge Dale. I loved him when I saw him in Rubicon on AMC, like, a decade ago. And, you know, he's been in other things, but he's not the leading man that's going to get asses in the seats in the multiplex. And I don't mean any offense, but when I say that, it's just, that's just the way it is. Like, there was no one in this movie of a caliber of like, oh, we should actually release this and not just kind of put it out at the very end when like no one's looking.
Yeah. Hey, look, it's got legs right now. It's got legs. People are talking about it besides just like Reddit. I mean, stories in the last week or two have started popping up, quite a few in my Google News feed. Now, I know that's algorithms are finding them for me because I've been searching about this movie, but that they're real articles by real publications. So there is definitely a chance this has a second life. And I think it's going to surprise Disney, too. I think if you're a horror fan and you want something different, definitely check this out. This is, I'm telling everybody this now, it's a phoned-down movie. You cannot watch this half like paying attention. There's too many little things to pick up. There's too many amazing shots you could miss. But it's really a great unfolding, almost crime drama. It's set to a horror, and it requires your full attention. This is definitely not one where like I could kind of, not like Thunder Force that we'll talk about next, but this is a great movie, and I actually recommend it highly to everybody.
Yeah, me too.
Matt,
absolutely.
Matt, we love having you on the show. Is there anything else you recommend that we watch right now? I mean, we are obviously at a point where movie theaters are reopening. King Kong did fantastic. I'm very happy that that's like, you know, they say it's the first like major pandemic movie. I'm like, what was it going up against? Like Tenet. But yeah. you know, in general, like I do love that, seeing that how that's kind of recovering. Though we did find out yesterday that Arclight might be going under in some weird fashion.
Terrible.
But you know, is there anything else that you recommend people check out? Maybe we even review.
There's a brand new horror comedy about a pair of killer women's jeans called Slacks, SLAXX.
So Slacks just got added to my wish list yesterday. I read about it. So we will be checking that out soon if I could, you know, if it's out on demand yet, which I'm not sure if it is, but absolutely we'll be checking that out. Matt, always great having you on the show. Thank you so much. We'll let you go so you don't have to listen to us talk about Thunder Force because that's going to get ugly.
I love you. I miss you. Thanks for having me, boys.
Take care, buddy.
Love you, dude. Take care.
Thunder Force, buddy. Thunder Force. Buddy. I was so happy that you came up with the lineup this week because I've been drowning in work, but like Thunder Force. Not that I had anything better except for the Mikey Erg stuff album, but like, dude, I watched this movie.
We did too. It wasn't great. You know, so Thunder Force is directed by Ben Falcone, who is the husband of Melissa McCarthy, who apparently only directs her movies. I guess that's how it works. This is a movie about, in a world where supervillains are commonplace, two estranged childhood best friends reunite after one devises a treatment that gives them powers to protect their city. It takes place in Chicago, which I love. I don't think there's enough cinematic things that actually take place in Chicago, so that had it going for it. But it wasn't a very good movie. It was a movie that was, I was reading up on it, people were like claiming it's supposed to be super like funny, but it didn't really have the jokes to make it a super funny movie. And it airs on Netflix. Octavia Spencer and Melissa McCarthy, they get the superpowers, they have to fight the bad guys. And, you know, it's a movie about family. It's a very big, like, family and, like, lifelong friendship movie. But it just didn't really have the jokes to deliver on, you know, kind of what it was made out to be.
But it wasn't lifelong friendship. They, like, rediscover each other after, like the whole thing was...
Tomato. It's not a good movie. I mean, the best part of the movie, I will say, and the actual funniest bits in the movie are with Jason Bateman. He's got, like, crab arms, and he forms a bond with Melissa McCarthy's character, and there are some really hilarious jokes out of the two of them. Like, those are the only two things that were happening on screen this entire movie where I was like laughing my ass off, and then there was the rest of the movie. So I'm gonna recommend a pass. Wait, on
you haven't let
Thunder
me
Force.
Say anything. You haven't even let me talk.
I'm going to let you talk in a minute, man.
You don't give your rating until we've talked about it. Damn it.
I feel like I've encompassed a lot of what goes on in this movie, but you do your thing, man.
Hey, look, I
is this the steroids talking? Are you roid raging out on me since you got like the steroids and the vaccine at the same time? Is that what happens?
My one foot is kicking the microphone right now. It's like angrily kicking the microphone. No, and look, the premise is actually pretty hilarious. I thought it was actually a pretty good idea, which is like the only people that get superpowers are villains. Like, there's no good guys. It's like you get there's this great early scene where you just see this like super villainous just like shooting random people, and because she's the only one that has powers, so she's a villain. And look, there's this whole like, again, it actually is that Melissa McCarthy hasn't seen her friends because she turned into like white trash, and her friend became like the super genius creating. She's trying to create superpowers for good people. Like, that's where it's just the plot is so dumb, and she creates it, and Melissa McCarthy, through some stupid unfortunate events, manages to steal the serum and then become superpowered. But you know, you have to teach, so it's like Pretty Woman but not, where you like have to like get her to like understand superheroism and just not be dumb. It just isn't funny, like from the beginning, like that Urkel joke in like the first 15 minutes where she's like, oh, your daughter, she looks like Urkel, and they're all like looking at her, and she's like, you know, Urkel, I'm Urkel, and then it goes on for like 5 minutes, and
I'm like, awkward as shit,
and I'm like, this isn't funny, this isn't even like, this is uncomfortable and not in a good way. I just couldn't understand, especially if her husband made this. Like, you would think it would be like an art, you know, like Affleck and Damon doing Goodwill Hunting type shit here. Like, you know, no, it's not. It's really, and it's sad because it had, like, even if it was a bad story, you put good comedians in and you should have a good movie, like, or at least a decent movie. Like, The Rock is the perfect example. The Rock takes shitty fucking movies and he makes them good because he's The Rock. And like, sometimes
he elevates everything. He's The Rock.
You can. And I told that to my mom the other day. My mom was watching. My mom wanted to watch Godzilla versus King Kong, and she accidentally watched the movie with the. Fuck, George, why are you so dumb? The movie with the big, the video game movie that The Rock was in with the big monsters.
Rampage.
Rampage. She accidentally watched Rampage by mistake instead of King Kong vs. Godzilla. And she's like, this movie was terrible, but I kept watching it. I'm like, because The Rock. And The Rock is able to do that. And like, I've seen so many bad Rock movies, but they're not the worst movies in the world because he brings that to it. And Melissa McCarthy just can't carry that like that, especially this movie. I was hoping it'd be more like of a Zoolander type feel to it, but it's not. And it was disappointing. And like, it's sad because like, I've been thinking we should talk about it because we haven't really talked about it. And because I feel like all our segments other than Empty Man are going to go short. We saw the new, short, the at a 2 minute, not a trailer, but you know, like what's happening, the new Ghostbusters movie. And the new Ghostbuster movie, which I believe is Ghostbusters Afterlife. Is that what it's called?
Yep.
They showed a short clip of Paul Rudd going into a Baskin Robbins, which is ironic because he's in a Baskin Robbins and Ant-Man, and he finds the mini Stay Puffs, and they like are fucking insane nihilists, and they're little Stay Puff marshmallow men, and it's just the greatest thing ever. And then like you go back and you watch the trailer from last year, and you're like, oh my god, they're gonna do Ghostbusters right, and then you're like, why did they do Ghostbusters wrong? And you're like, it wasn't because there was female Ghostbusters. It was just like, they fucking just didn't write a good movie. It just wasn't a good movie. And I think we reviewed that a long, long time ago. It just, it should have been good. You want it to be good. It wasn't very good. And Thunder Force just fall. I just don't want to see Melissa McCarthy fall into that trap because, you know, I think she's great. When she's great, she's on fire. But then she picks some like, you know, I don't want her to be like this generation's like, you know, Adam Sandler.
Wow, you're blowing my mind, man. That's a fantastic commentary on the situation. I think that, you know, it's interesting because money-wise, Adam Sandler doing what he's done, he's probably making more, and he's making more movies and getting them seen by more people by going the Netflix route and just doing everything with Netflix. And then every so often, he kind of was like, all right, I'm going to stop telling dick and fart jokes and I'm going to do Uncut Gems and something like that. So, I mean, it might be a great path for her to follow that footsteps where she makes these Netflix movies and suddenly comes out with this masterpiece just to remind you that she could still hang. You know, the Ghostbusters movie was a lot of great actresses in there, a lot of great people in there, but the problem was that you are taking a sacred cow and trying to, for all intents and purposes, put lipstick on it and modernize it and do it with a studio that's not going to have your back. Mm-hmm. And that was the problem, that Sony kept like caving to angry fans online, and there kept being more rewrites and changes and this and that and the other thing. And by the end of the movie, they didn't really even have a movie together. I mean, that movie, I enjoyed it. And because I enjoy all those actresses, and it was a nice little nostalgia pop, but you know, looking back on it, it was kind of held together by like a wish and a prayer. Like by the time it actually hit screens, like you could tell that it wasn't the movie that they'd meant to make. Mm-hmm. By the time it made it, they just needed to get it across the finish line to get the heat off their back from all these nerds.
Yeah. And look, Thunder Force is the number one movie right now on Netflix. And I, you know, when I saw that, I was like, okay, I'll give it a chance. Like, you know, I realize that you're going through this like midlife crisis where you're only watching young adult movies. So I've been like, oh, you know,
on the brain, my friend.
I'll go that route for a little bit until we start getting yelled at. But then I'm like watching and I'm like, this just doesn't hit that second gear at all. And then the Urkel joke. And then I kept going and I'm like, oh, wow, this is not getting better. So yeah, I think it's completely a skip and it's passed. Luckily you're not paying money for it because it's on Netflix and that's where we are. Meanwhile, I did do, you know, every now and then I peruse the, you know, I have to go find like new albums. Like it's hard. It's not as easy as it used to be. I used to be able to get like, I used to go to Sam Goody and it'd be like a list of all upcoming releases. Now you have to like hunt for it a little bit. It's not very easy to do. But I found out Mike Yerg released a new album. I think I was trying to find out when The Offspring's new album is coming out, which is next week. Will be our lead segment next week, dropping this Thursday. I'm so excited. Love everything I've heard so far from it. Love reading all the reviews. Oh, I could just talk about that. I think next week might all be an all Offspring episode. But Mike Yerg, beloved punk rock drummer. I did not realize he did things other than play drums. I know he's, I believe, currently the drummer of Against Me. I could be wrong, but everyone talks about him. Everyone loves him. He's like in every band ever, including the Ergs, named after him. I was like, let me check this out. And I really, really enjoy this new self-titled album. Mike Yerg, what are your thoughts? You're more of his generation, so I figured I'd ask you to tell me your thoughts.
I really loved it. I really loved it. And I am actually, I'm going to say I'm enjoying the segments that we do because it actually makes me not listen to Husker Du for a day. And like, I actually have to listen to new music. And, you know, Mike Yerg's been around forever. I'm sure that our paths have crossed. I don't really remember it that well, but then there's certain years I don't remember at all. However, he's loved, he's respected in all of the punk rock scenes. And this new album I thought was funny because his new album is self-titled. It's called Mikey Erg. And the cover is a riff on the first Clash album. And when in my brain, because the first Clash album is one of my favorite albums of all time, when I saw him standing alone on the cover, I thought, oh, it must be an acoustic album because there's only one person on the cover. I was wrong. Clearly. But I mean, like in your brain, when you see that green and you see that red and you see that black and white shot, all I can see are the Clash. And now, you know, I think it's a pretty cool move that he kind of redid that cover, but just for his solo record. And I think it's a really, really solid record from front to back.
Yeah. It is. When I first heard it, the first thing I thought was Young Descendants. Like, it just felt like the Descendants. It just felt like a young Milo singing. And that immediately caught my attention. Again, most of the songs on here, I think the album's under a half hour long. Very much of a Descendants type feel to it. And very much of that era, too. And by era, I think I mean more like the mid-90s Descendants, not the early 80s Descendants. But I obviously, it's a sound I grew up with, sound I loved. You know, it's a fun punk rock album. And I also thought the same thing you did. I thought it'd be like a singer songwriter thing. It's not. It's a straight up, you know, like pop punk album.
Yeah. And it's actually made by a person who sounds like they still love making music. Mm-hmm. And I think that there is a very like distinct thing that happens to a lot of bands where, you know, you hear their later albums and you're just like, well, they're making an album because this is their job. But you can still tell that there's fire in Mike Yerg's heart and there's passion behind it. So, you know, it's a very genuine album. It's a very fun album to listen to. It's a very like, it's over before it starts kind of album. And I think that's good. And I think that's kind of a testament to his songwriting and the way the album sounds is that like you can just kind of become one with it and then it's over, you know, like it's not, you're not sitting there being like, oh wait, what the fuck is this song? Cause you know, there's a lot of records out there that we've listened to. And you know, you dear listener, I know you feel the same way where you're listening to an album by a band. You're like, what the fuck is this? Like, why did they do this song? Like this just makes no sense. And then you suddenly, the album is kind of ruined because you were feeling good for the first seven songs, but track eight, oh no.
Well, you know, track eight's a cover of Green Day's Going to Pasalacca. Am I saying that right?
That's why I made the track eight. Joke.
Okay. I didn't know. I didn't know if that was a thing.
It's actually like, really good, though.
Yeah, it's very good cover of it. And I think this is a really good. Look, I started paying attention to, I started paying attention to Mike Yerg because the Ergs were regulars on the Chris Gethard show. And he's a big, big fan of theirs and supporter of theirs. And then when Against Me kind of fell apart and Laura Jane Grace was trying to recreate it, I don't know if you knew this, but there was a change.org petition to get Mikey Erg to be the drummer of Against Me. Did you know that?
I would sign it.
No. Did you know that?
No, I didn't know it, but I would sign it.
Yeah, well, it was real. It was absolutely real. And it worked. And she's like, I don't know if we needed a petition for this. And it was a tryout, and he's became the drummer of Against Me for the last couple albums. And he might still be the drummer of Against Me. I'm sure people yell at me about that. But very, very good album. It gets self-titled. I believe it's on Don Giovanni. Is that the name of the record label?
Yeah, feels right. I just jumped off that screen. But yeah, I mean, here's the beautiful thing, folks. It's G-O-O-G-L-E. You type in Mike Yerg S-T and you're going to find this album. I recommend if Bandcamp does it on a Friday again, where they give all the royalties to the artist, you buy it on a Friday. If not, buy it today or listen to it on your favorite streaming service because it's dope.
Or you do what I do and buy it on vinyl.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, there is that too. I don't think like that because I don't have any records.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Yes. You can buy it on vinyl too.
I pre-ordered the new Offspring album And I pre-ordered the new Rise Against album, and I pre-ordered, I didn't pre-order the new Dropkick Murphys. I think that might be a streamer, but we'll review that in a couple weeks too. I've been, you know, I've been definitely, there's been a nice stockpile of albums coming out. I believe a box set of like all the Bob Mould stuff just came out too. Like his entire catalog of solo stuff. So if you like Bob Mould, like a certain person on this show does, you definitely.
Oh, it's me. It's me.
You make me laugh. Anyway, one last thing to talk about. I did not watch this because you said there were singing puppets and that Gabe might be afraid. We are still struggling. Update. So we'll do a Gabe update. We're struggling a little bit with commercials. I think we've talked about that. He now, because of that commercial, will not watch anything on television. So all we're allowed to watch now is Disney Plus or on demand at my parents' house. So that's it. Like whoever out there did that, whoever made that computer, you've literally ruined advertising for my child completely. Yep. Straight up. Like you are horrible. I still haven't figured out who it is. I do need to just record like Nick Jr. for a whole day and just go through commercials so I can find it. Cause I think we need to play it on this show if I can find it. But he is upset, but big update. So 2 weeks, maybe 3 weeks ago, we talked about how we're trying to potty train him. Like basically the teachers are like, look, he's going to the next pre-K class. You got to potty train him. So I'm like, we got to potty train him. Like we perfectly fine with him in diapers. Like, you know, it's not that bad. But it is. And so we started and we spent a week or so to doing it. And he took the peeing thing straight away. Like just I can go pee, go potty. OK, no problem. He didn't shit for 6 days.
What?
He didn't shit for 6 days. I started getting very, very nervous. So I went out and bought like the one toy he wanted more than anything else. And that was Wildcat, the Wildcat puppet. And I think we talked about on the show. Oh, no, we talked about before we went on air 1 week when you were talking to him. And he's like, all he wanted was Wildcat. I finally found the fucking thing. It's the new Paw Patrol who's a cat. And, like, we found it. And I'm like, Gabe, you have to go poopy. Or I did not want to have to do a suppository. Like, I just did not have it in me to shove something on my kid's ass. And that's part of dadding that they don't tell you about. But I just said, I'm like, this is it. I have Wildcat. Here's the box. You shit, I will give it to you. And he's like, all right, I'm going to do it. He kept going. No poopy. Wildcat. I'm like, no, you got to take a shit. And he's like, and it was like every 5 minutes all day long. And finally he goes in there and he fucking squeezes. He pinches a loaf and you hear it drop. And he's like, Wildcat. And then he gets up, gets up off the toilet. He looks at his shit. He goes, wow, it's a poopy submarine.
I don't know what to do with that, man.
I didn't even know he knew what a submarine was, but it was a poopy submarine. And I'm like, you're right, it is. You're 100% right. He got that Wildcat, and he's been shitting fairly regularly, like every other day or so since. We've been had a couple days where it took a little longer, but that's like the hardest part. But he hasn't had any accidents. And I think there's something to be said about potty training a little bit older. He's like 3 and a half, so he like completely can tell us, like, I gotta go to the bathroom, I don't want to pee on myself. So it's been working. 2 and a half weeks later,
it had to be a massive shit after 6 days.
It was a poopy submarine. It was what it was. I got nothing else for you. Talk to me about musical trolls.
Well, you know, I do like the fantasy genre, and I saw this thing pop up and I was like, oh man. You know, now a little side story, Dungeons and Dragons try to do, or something affiliated with Dungeons and Dragons, try to do something similar maybe 4 months ago. And they got shit on left and right because they tried to make it like sexy and racy, and they gave like a puppet tits, and it was like a whole thing. Like it just didn't go well, and it immediately had to go away. So when I saw this pop up on Nickelodeon, I'm like, well, you know, there's a certain degree of decorum that Nickelodeon is going to use where, you know, it's probably a little more family friendly. And the Barbarian and the Troll follows Evan, a bridge troll in search of adventure, and Brendar, a fierce female warrior on a quest to defeat the evil demon who has imprisoned her brother. And, you know, it looks cute. I mean, there's like Muppet style puppets, and a lot of these Muppet style puppets are like dragons and skeletons and, like, you know, bat pigs and like other weird shit. It's, you know, singing weaponry. And, you know, I'm like, all right, this seems pretty fun. I'm watching it. First episode's a little bit slow. You know, it's backstory for both Brendar and for Evan the Troll. However, you know, one of the things that he'll tell you up front about Evan the Troll is that he is a troll who likes to sing, and he carries around a lute and he writes songs constantly. So as I'm watching this, the first, you know, I see like the trolls and I'm like, oh, it might be a little too scary for Gabe. And then I see like skeletons attacking in a tavern. I'm like, oh, that might be a little too scary for Gabe. And then the little troll fucker starts singing. And I'm like, well, this is definitely not for George. And I was like, well, maybe it's just one song because he's in the tavern. And like, he's performing in the tavern. So I feel like it didn't count. I mean, would you feel like that if it's a troll who is known for singing and he was performing in a tavern, that it wouldn't technically count as a musical, George?
It is a musical if it continues more than once in a show.
Well, it continues at least twice every episode, because I watched the first two episodes and there is a lot of singing. I think episode two had three songs in it.
Nope. Nope. I mean, that's all I know. I will tell you this, though. Gabe's favorite holiday is Halloween, and he has no problem with skeletons. He loves Nightmare Before Christmas. So,
really?
So do not. That's not what he's afraid of. He's afraid of, like, so. All right. So WrestleMania was this week. And yeah, maybe we'll finish with WrestleMania. WrestleMania was. Well, no. Let me. You finish your review.
So it's fun. I would say that if you've got little kids who are into fantasy, it's definitely light enough fantasy that the kids are going to enjoy. It is adult enough that you will chortle as well. However, there's some singing. And if you don't want to hear singing, it might not be the show for you. But, you know, Nickelodeon, bring in the fun, the barbarian and the troll.
WrestleMania was this week, and there was a scene in the day one where the Miz and Morrison come out to fight Bad Bunny and Damian Priest, and they bring out a gaggle of bunnies, fucking flock of them. There was like 12 people dressed up in bunny outfits, and they were hopping and dancing to music out to the ring, and Gabe's already like, I don't know if I like this, guys. I don't know if I like this. And they hop into the ring and they keep dancing, and they're freaking like, those like the cheapest bunny outfits ever. Their ears start falling off. Like their ears start breaking off into the ring. And he's like, nope, don't like this. Don't want to watch this. Put on Muppet Babies. And Gabe loves wrestling. And I'm like, Gabe, it's just that the bunnies are going to go away. Don't worry. Don't like bunnies. I'm like, it's for Bad Bunny. I don't like Bad Bunny. I don't like bunnies. I want this off TV now. Thank God they cut away pretty quickly. But that was like, he doesn't like stuff like that. That is more. And again, that goes to the animatronic type of thing where it's like, why is this person dressed up as a bunny with his ear falling off? That didn't work at all. WrestleMania was this weekend. 2 days of it. We talked about it a little bit last week. I watched all of it. I watched all of it. I watched everything. I watched NXT both nights. I watched this. I made a week of family wrestling. And I want to, anybody out there who hasn't watched, day one is the night to watch. I hope they've learned their lesson. I know this partially because of the pandemic, but this two-night WrestleMania thing doesn't work. Like, it's just, it's too much. And it's also, like, if you stack it wrong, someone's going to feel gypped because the prices for tickets were the same amount as ours. Like, I looked and, like, the seats we bought were the same prices around the same area there. So then you're like, what, getting half a show? So you cheat the people out of it. There's no way you're going to fill a stadium 2 days in a row full to capacity, especially if you don't know what the card's going to be in advance. And then much like last year, like, except last year they got a pass because it was, like, not in front of an audience. It was not in front of anything. The pandemic had just started. Like, they get a pass for last year. This year, though, day one started with a rain delay. Have you ever heard of a rain delay at WrestleMania?
I've never heard of a rain delay at WrestleMania.
It was so weird. Like they open up with Vince McMahon coming out, and it's pouring rain, and he's getting wet. He's basically thanking everybody for coming back. Like, he's really, you know, just, like, thanking the fan for being there. And he is wet. Everybody's wet. They cut back. And then they cut to, like, America the Beautiful, and whoever's singing, it's pouring rain. Like, you can tell it's raining. But you see, like, a, like, cloud of doom coming over the stadium. And then, like, you find out that they've sent all the audience people back to their cars because there's, like, a potential tornado coming through. And all of a sudden they're like, they do the here now, then now forever. And they do the awesome package, the pirate package for this a tongue in cheek one about for the second time ever, WrestleMania will be 2 days. Like they did a really funny, great package you should try to find. But afterwards they come back and it's just like an extended, like the commentators at ringside. And I'm like, this is WrestleMania. Why are we spending 10 minutes with Michael Cole? Then I'm like, oh shit, they can't start the show. And then you're reading Twitter and there's lightning cracking all around the stadium. And then they start cutting to just random wrestlers who are good promos, just doing promos, like unrehearsed, unscripted, just, you know, Kevin Owens, here you go, 5 minutes, we need to kill time. And that was like 35, 40 minutes of WrestleMania at the beginning.
But it was some good promo work, though, because these are wrestlers who constantly have someone in their ear telling them what to say. And now they're just like, fuck it. It was just surreal.
It was just surreal because we had never seen anything like this. We've always thought it could happen, but we've never seen it. So WrestleMania is rain delayed. And then, you know, we're hearing they're not going to cut the matches. So they're going to go long with the show because they don't want to like cut it. And that makes sense because there's fewer matches because they're doing two nights. And from the get-go, you know, they decided to get rid of the most boring match first, Drew McIntyre versus Bobby Lashley. That was what it was. And then, like, good match after good match. You got Seth Rollins versus Cesaro, great match. You had the just everything on there was just, like, a solid match. Even though I didn't feel like all of it was WrestleMania worthy, I thought they were very good. And then you had Bad Bunny and Damian Priest versus Miz and Morrison, and Bad Bunny, who is an EDM performer, one of the most famous millionaire. I mean, that Bugatti was obviously his from last Raw. Like this guy,
it was not a rental.
Yeah, that dude is like Prince money. He is the king of that. And he comes into the ring and you think it's going to be like the Stephen Amell or any of these other ones where he just gets a hot tag at the end and he, you know, he does a couple spots that he learned and it maybe he's good or maybe he's bad. And, you know, in some cases like Snoop Dogg on AEW, it's horrible. In some cases like Stephen Amell, it's a couple minutes of really good stuff. No, John, this was a half hour match and Bad Bunny wrestled 20 minutes of it.
Yeah, like, you know,
I got nothing.
Nobody could have seen that coming.
No one.
And honestly, from the reports you hear, you're like, yeah, Bad Bunny's like down here. He's working out at the Performance Center. He's taking this very seriously. And man, we've heard he's taking this very seriously how many times?
Yeah.
Over how many years? And you get like one flying crossbody and that's it. You know,
they did this match. Like the best thing I can compare it to is it was a flawless Enzo Cass match back when Enzo and Cassidy were a real thing, you know.
Dude,
they would do a very specific type of match where Enzo would be in there just getting his ass kicked for, and Enzo is a very small guy, not a professional wrestler, so to speak. Like he only recently had become a professional wrestler. He was more of a character, and he basically just went in there and looked like a million bucks, did a couple very good moves, but that's what he did. But he did it for like 20 minutes, and then they would hot tag the big guy who'd come in and clear house, and then Enzo would score the pin. That was this match. And it was done flawlessly, but he also pulled a Canadian destroyer out. Like, it was nuts, like, on the fucking concrete. Like, it was just the stuff he was doing. And again, a lot of people think it was maybe Shawn Michaels who trained him on this, because it was a lot of Shawn Michaels' moveset, a lot of splashes from the top rope. But he fought two guys on his own for 20 minutes, tagged Damian Priest in, who did the big stuff, and then he came back in, like he tagged back in. Like, it's just, it was, I had never seen anything like that. I haven't seen anything like that since like Ronda Rousey with Kurt Angle. And yes, like the Miz and Morrison protected him heavily and they really led the match. And a lot of cool moves he did, like the Tilt-A-World Head Scissors and the Canadian Destroyer. Again, it's a lot the other wrestler who does the move, but it was insane how perfectly he did it. This guy is like built like us. I mean, he's not like a extremely muscular guy. He did come out in like a flak jacket. He was fully covered. But he had I'd say the second best match on WrestleMania.
Dude, he stole the show. And for those listening at home, describing a Canadian destroyer is hard. It's when you take a guy and you go ass over tea kettle. And it's not a move that you're going to be making like right off the bat. This is like an advanced move. It's not like you're dropping someone like with a running bulldog, or, you know, you're chopping someone across their chest or hitting them with a clothesline. Like, this takes a lot of effort in like precision. And yes, your partner is doing a good amount of the work as well, but like a lot could go. The Canadian Destroyer was banned for years. It was a banned move up until recently, right?
Well, so it's basically a pile driver. It's like basically a sit down.
It's like a flippy pile driver.
It's a flipping pile driver. Yes, if you screw it up, you screw it up bad. You kill a person.
But like they're doing it, and like you know, shout out to Bad Bunny. Bad Bunny brought it in a way that no celebrity has ever brought it before. And probably will never again. Like, I'd be shocked to see, like, the next celebrity. No one. Oh, man. I would hate to be the next celebrity coming in who does a spot because everyone's going to shit on it because we got Bad Bunny this year.
It was so. And again, I'm older. I had no idea who Bad Bunny was. I knew he was a musical performer. I knew he was. I mean, he was brought in for the Royal Rumble because he did a song on his album as a tribute to G.I. Bro, which was Booker T, Hall of Famer Booker T's persona in WCW. They thought it'd be funny and a weird tie-in. Guy's a wrestling fan. Let's have him performing at Royal Rumble. And bring in, you know, have Booker T there in G.I. Bro outfit. It was a thing. It was like a skit. And then he, like, came back on Raw the next day and did some, like, palancha off the top rope. And they're like, oh, this guy's actually pretty good. And then it led to this. But never in my mind did I think he could pull off this match. And again, Stephen Amell's the closest thing. But Stephen Amell did not wrestle that whole match. It was largely Stardust and the WWE one, not the one he did later on. But it was not... He did some great... That guy's also a trained stunt guy. Like, there's a big difference between Steve Amell and Bad Bunny, and Bad Bunny wrestled, like, three times longer than Steve Amell did in this match. It was baffling. If you like wrestling or you like Bad Bunny, do yourself a favor and find that match and watch it. It is, like, nothing I've seen before, and I mean, that was the highlight of WrestleMania next to the match right afterwards, which I actually almost felt bad for them have to follow it, which was Sasha Banks versus Bianca Belair, which was amazing, and it was great.
Exceptional.
I think I would have liked it to have been a little bit longer even. There is a point in it where, so Bianca Belair, who those who don't know, she's a newer wrestler to WWE main roster, but she has this incredibly long braid that goes down almost to her feet, and she whips people with it. She uses a weapon, but it's not a weapon because it's her body, blah, blah, blah. Great psychology in this match because Sasha Banks would take it and use it against her. She was basically using, and she's like, well, it's a weapon. Like, it's, I can use this against her. At the very end of the match, Bianca gets a whip in on her that I don't think she realized how hard she whipped her, and the sound it made and the damage, like, immediately you saw it.
It's like welding right up.
Light up. And it was one of the most devastating, like, it was her side rib cage, the most painful part of your body. And then she pinned her, and it was one of the most incredible moments. First of all, it was the first time two black women had ever wrestled headline WrestleMania. But that's like, forget that. I mean, only once ever have we had women headline WrestleMania. So, like,
yeah,
to be able to do it 2 years later with two black women, have it be in front of a crowd, have it be an incredible moment and incredible match after this other amazing match. Night one, and that was just a few of those, but night one was great. Night one should have been WrestleMania with maybe adding the headlining match from night two, which was very good, but not a way to end. Like, Bianca Belair should have been the last thing you saw at WrestleMania, not Roman Reigns pinning two guys at the same time. Like,
yeah,
they should have flipped the shows. If anything, night two should have been night one. And, you know, even with the rain delay, like, the first night of WrestleMania was WrestleMania. And even that, it made it even more special because of the rain delay, because you had never seen anything like that before. So it just felt really good. So, you know, we talked about it last week. Also, NXT TakeOver, top to bottom, amazing, amazing show. But that's always amazing. Both yeah. nights, that was great. But WrestleMania, it was really like, they can't do that. You can't charge people what you charge and not give them a full show. And that's where I think they're going to really rethink it next year. And I'm not even going to get into Hulk Hogan getting booed out of the place.
Unsurprising to nobody.
Yeah. I mean, night two was just like, I watched it instead of watching 90 Day Fiancé Tell All, which, you know, I was like, look, this is WrestleMania. This is a very important thing to me. I enjoyed night one so much. Like, I'm going to watch WrestleMania night two. Alice is like, I'll watch it with you. Let's do it. You know, it means a lot. It's WrestleMania. And we also are very, and I'm sure you get emotional too. Like, we got the last great WrestleMania, possibly ever. Like, very possibly ever.
We did.
The last great WrestleMania. And it was literally one of the greatest WrestleManias of all time. And there is a moment in the package. If you can watch it, if you can watch it, watch the opening montage package either night. They do a similar one, but they basically have retcon 36 and they're showing like the greatness as WrestleMania. And then like they talk about the pandemic and then they cut to a shot of MetLife Stadium with the fireworks. And like, I was just like ready to lose my shit. Like,
it was a real special day, man.
Yeah. Like that is like one of the last, I mean, it was just like that. I'm so glad that was like the last thing we remember doing that and like Iron Maiden. So like it was really an emotional moment when they cut to that. And yeah. And then like night two completely blew it. So anyway, WrestleMania night one, definitely go watch it. And NXT TakeOver, go watch it. And, you know, hopefully it was weird watching Raw the next day back in the Thunderdome. Like, I did like seeing the crowd. I will say this. I don't know if you noticed it, John, but like when they said 25% capacity, you know what they meant? They shoved all 25% capacity into the front hard cam. So these dudes are on top of each other. Half of them are too drunk to know not to wear to wear their masks. Like, it was just like 25% of the stadium with chin straps in the front fucking like hard cam area. I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. The rest of the place was cardboard.
It really was. And that had to be, at first I was like, wow, there's a lot. Because the first shot I saw online, it was the picture that I was like, wow, there's a lot of people there.
Yeah.
There's like a lot of people there. And then I heard there was a rain delay and I was like, oh man, that's going to be rough for a lot of people there. And then I found out that it was mostly cardboard people and it made it even funnier for me because I'm just like, oh shit, it's a rain delay and half the fans are going to melt.
I sent you the photo, right? Like, it's the whole second level was cardboard.
Yeah.
Yeah. Look, I mean, we're not going to judge. It's Florida. Florida doesn't have any fucking restrictions. They never have. They could have They could have went 100%. Like, I actually give them credit for at least being a little bit safe. Like, they didn't need to. It's Florida. So whatever, but it was still funny that like their 25% capacity was just like to throw everybody opposite camera and call it a day. Look, John, how can the kids reach you?
Listen, you can find me on the Twitter and on Instagram at John McGuire RPG. I tweet about board games. I tweet about cute animals. I tweet about Dungeons and Dragons and other RPGs. And sometimes leave the house and I take photos of it. So I put stuff up online. That's where you can find me. George, where can people find you?
People can find me at GLK Creative on Instagram and Twitter. I have a new show called George Talks Tech that's doing very well on the Twitter. I'm quite happy. This is so strange.
Verizon
gave me my own show. You can find me. Our Instagram is at mytiehappyhour.com. As soon as I come up from breath from the craziness at work, I will start making that a little bit better. You can find our entire archive at mytietv.com. You can find our videos on YouTube. We are hopefully going to do some videos again. I really want to do some live streams where we engage with you guys again in real time on YouTube. And I think their platform is great right now for it. They just never found a way to be able to do two people remote, which sucks. But we're going to be back stronger than ever. A couple weeks. We have a show next week, the Offspring Extravaganza, which will probably have other segments, but we'll just call it that for now. I am vaccinated and going to take a vacation the week afterwards. So
hell yeah,
we are taking a week off, the week of 27th. We will be back hopefully in person, fully inoculated, the week afterwards, first week of May. Stay tuned, rate, review, and subscribe. We love you, John. Take us out.
Everybody remember, be nice. Get vaccinated, socially distance yourself, order some takeout, treat yourself okay. Aloha.